In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive.
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, part two of my conversation with Andrew Collins, author of The Cygnus Key, The Denisovan Legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and The Birth of Egypt.
We're suddenly realizing that there's an alternative to the idea that the lost civilization may have come from either ancient Atlantis or from space aliens or from just some slow gradual evolution. That it's possible that our own civilization was gifted to us by this archaic human group. And the word archaic really doesn't do them justice, because the Denisovans would seem to have been incredibly intelligent people with a completely different mindset that had their own cultures, their own technologies, which probably some of them were lost thereafter, and we're only rediscovering today.
If you love Conspiracy Unlimited as much as I love bringing you three new episodes every week, I have a small favor to ask. It will really help me and support this podcast. I need you to fill out a very small, simple survey. You can find the URL for the survey in the episode notes, but I'll also give you the URL right now. To find this quick but important survey, please visit http://. survey.libsyn.com, L-I-B-S-Y-N, libsyn.com/conspiracy-unlimited. Again, http://survey.libsyn.com/conspiracy-unlimited. Thanks again, everyone.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Monday. Well, the boys and I have touched down in Athens, and we are on our way to Kalamata, about a three-hour drive, where we'll hook up with the mighty Aphrodite, who flew out ahead of us by a week to open up the house and get the Wi-Fi ready so I can continue to produce these podcasts. Greece, of course, the birthplace of democracy and philosophy, the home of Pythagoras and Archimedes, Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato. But there was an advanced ancient civilization that predates ancient Greece by tens of thousands of years, and it was centered in what is now Russian Siberia. This extinct human population are now known as the Denisovans. They were of exceptional size, the ancient giants of myth, perhaps, but they also achieved high levels of culture and technology. They were also devoted to the cult of the swan, which centered around the constellation Cygnus, thought to be the portal to the sky world and the afterlife. The ancestors of the Denisovans would go on to construct the amazing and mysterious structure in southeastern Turkey known as Göbekli Tepe and the Great Pyramids of Giza. Andrew Collins has been investigating the idea of advanced civilizations in prehistory since 1979. He is the co-discoverer of a massive cave complex beneath the Giza Plateau, now known as Collins Caves. He's the author of several books, including From the Ashes of Angels and Göbekli Tepe, Genesis of the Gods. His new book is called The Cygnus Key, The Denisovan Legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and the Birth of Egypt. These technological advancements, and you mentioned the drills, this is fascinating. I want to connect some dots and see if I'm on the mark or off the mark. Because the Bronze Age, not enough copper in Europe to account for the Bronze Age, but there were copper mine operations on the south shore of Lake Superior, not too far from where I'm sitting. And I'm wondering whether these giants may have had a role in mining copper that fueled the Bronze Age.
It's possible. I mean, let's fill in a few gaps there, because obviously we're talking about Siberia. You know, we're talking here now about North America. So, you know, what is the relationship? What is the link? Well, firstly, the Denisovans unquestionably interbred with modern humans. How this happened, we don't know. But it happened either in Central Asia or in Eastern Asia, possibly even also in Southeast Asia. And the hybrid descendants of these people continued west eastwards, reaching as far as Melanesia, Australia, New Zealand, Solomon Islands in the South Pacific, the Philippines. And they also got across into both North and South America. We know this from the fact that there are a large number of modern populations with Denisovan DNA present today. So we know that they were in North America. Now, if we look at North America, we find that there is a couple of tribes more than any other that have Denisovan DNA far more than anybody else. And these are the Ojibwa and the Cree in the area of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence River area. And how they got this Denisovan DNA is still a mystery. I mean, this is something which I'm bringing out in a second book, which we're in theory not talking about today, which is which is going to be called The Nisavan Dawn, which I'm writing with Dr. Greg Little, one of North America's leading experts on mound building cultures and the DNA of the First Peoples of America. I'm doing that now. But we're getting close, therefore, to the copper mines of Lake Superior, because the other important thing is the giants of America themselves. Because as you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, there have been literally hundreds, if not thousands, of giant bones
yes.
being found within Native American mounds. And when these are found, and by the way, I mean, there's a lot with myself and Greg, you know, spent a lot of time going around these different locations of the discovery of, you know, giant skeletons for this book, trying to find out the truth behind these stories. And a number of the popular accounts that you find in the newspapers, you know, New York Times and things like this, they are hoaxes, fabrications, things like that. But we are talking specifically about academic reports. We've only gone by academic and scholarly sources. And there are hundreds of these that confirm that giant skeletons, 7 to 7.5 feet tall, were found within these mounds, mostly from the Edina period,
yes.
which dates from about 1000 BC down to about 200 BC. And when these skeletons are found, they're found in a prominent position. And what I mean by that is that they're generally in the center of the mound and there are normal sized people around them, you know, almost like in spokes of a wheel, as if it's very clear that the larger person is the person in charge. In various cases, the larger person has been found with shamanic paraphernalia and, you know, prestigious goods, which show that they're of high status. And it's very obvious, therefore, that these giants were the elites of the Edina. And this is something which myself and Greg first brought out in a book called Path of Souls that came out in 2014. And it's now being taken up by various archaeologists who are saying, yeah, I think you've actually got something here. Now, I've also put my neck out to suggest that these giants of America, you will find, are Denisovan hybrid descendants.
Uh-huh.
And they will have some kind of Denisovan DNA in them.
Fascinating.
Probably also, you know, Neanderthal as well, and obviously modern human, of course.
Right.
But they're not aliens. Let's point this out.
Okay. So let's bring the Denisovans back to Göbekli Tepe and how they connect to southeastern Turkey and that edifice.
Yeah, directly they don't connect at all, because I mean the Denisovans are out of the window by about 40,000 years ago. However, because they had interbred with modern humans, the legacy of the Denisovans carries on in these different populations, who very clearly went eastwards into places like China, Japan, Korea. They went southeastwards into, you know, Indonesia, Malaysia, Myanmar, you know, all these sort of places. They also went south into India and Pakistan. And, you know, that's it. But the reason why you have all this Denisovan DNA going eastwards is because that was what the main thrust of migrations was all about, coming out of Africa from a very early date, possibly as early as 200,000 years ago. We went eastwards, right? I mean, we'll come on to westwards in a minute, but we mostly went eastwards. And obviously we encountered the Denisovans at a certain point. I call this the Denisovan line. It's a line that stretches from the Arctic north down through Russia in the area of the Sayan Mountains, then down through the Altai Mountains, south through Central Asia, and eventually ending up in Pakistan and the Indus Valley area, and coming to the Arabian Sea around the area of Karachi. That's the line which I call the Denisovan line, because we don't find any evidence of Denisovan DNA to the west of this line at all, with one example, and that's in Finland. And I think that the reason why it's there is because of the migrations westwards of people from beyond the Ural Mountains, which form the borders between Europe and Asia, you know, in Russia, in central Russia. And people were flooding westwards across the top, you know, people that we now know as the Uralic or Finno-Ugric peoples. And they reached Finland and Scandinavia as an indigenous people. We know them as the Sami today. But that's it. But obviously our ancestors were also going out of Africa and going westwards into Europe as well. And they were encountering the Neanderthals there. And there seems to be a very strong cutoff line from Central Asia into Europe. But quite clearly, something was going on, and because you can trace the stone tool technology which was being developed at the very final phases of the Denisovans westwards. You can trace it. It's like a paper trail. And I mean, you know, this is not speculation. Other people have seen this same trail that comes from Mongolia in the Altai Mountains through the Urals into Europe and down also into Southwest Asia, where you find Göbekli Tepe. It takes many thousands of years to happen, but eventually it comes to places like Anatolia, where Göbekli Tepe will be constructed. It goes into Europe and forms various cultures there, like the Solutrians, the Swiderians, who I believe were a key culture, bringing a carrier culture, bringing very advanced ideas across Europe. And also down into the area of Göbekli Tepe. I believe that they were the elite behind the construction of the monuments at Göbekli Tepe. Their stone tools are present there. I mean, you know, their signatures, you can see them there. There's no other signatures of any other culture there other than indigenous peoples who already lived either in, the Near East or in the Levant, you know, the area between Egypt and Southeast Turkey.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again. And Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
So where did the Denisovans get their knowledge?
Well, that's a good question, of course. I mean, the Denisovans would seem to have had a different mindset to us. They possessed two genes which were revealed when the genome was you know, was examined in 2010. And these genes relate within modern populations to autism. And this is not to say, therefore, that the Denisovans were autistic in the sense that we might imagine it today. But it is possible that they developed some of the savant-like qualities using these genes and others relating to sides of the brain, which we don't really use today and are generally dormant within people who are non-autistic, and that these started opening up and allowed them to see the world and the universe as a whole in a slightly different manner. Maybe this allowed them to understand music in a way which you know, which was never understood before, allowed them to create musical instruments. Also, we know that autistic people, savant with savant qualities, calendar count. You know, they have this incredible ability to be able to predict exactly what day, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, you know, 30, 50, 100 years in the future or in the past. This calendar counting. We know that autistic people have incredible synesthesia perspective, that, you know, they can see colors when they hear sound. They can see shapes, you know, when they hear sound or people speak. You know, all these things are mixed together in a way which we might see as a jumble, but may have given them an idea relating to the relationship of music, architecture, calendar sounds, things like this. And here's the other interesting thing. We talked about this place called Malta, where you find these swan pendants showing that there was some kind of early swan cult there 24,000 years ago. Well, there are other very strange artifacts that have been found here, including something we refer to as the Malta plate. Now, this is a mammoth ivory flat plate. On one side, it's got these three carved snakes. And on the other side, it's got a series of seven spirals, six small ones and a big one in the center. And the amount of peck marks creating these spirals are very specific to cyclic time associated with the sun and the moon and eclipse cycles. I mean, we're talking about long-term eclipse cycles, so-called triple Saros cycles of 54 years. And if you also add up the numbers on this multiplate, which is something that was done by a Russian archaeologist who wrote a series of papers on this called Antole Larachev. You know, he believed that the amount of calendric knowledge on this multiplate was extraordinary. And I remember reading about this years ago and just thinking, this is just beyond my understanding. I'll leave it until one day when I might, you know, I might come back to this in some manner. And that time was now, because it started to fit in, because the numbers that are generated by the cyclic, the cyclic time are very familiar to us in other ways. 432, 216, 72, 54. These are all numbers that we find in connection with cyclic time in Vedic tradition, in India, for instance, within Chinese mythical cyclic time, within sacred architecture associated with cyclic time in places like Cambodia, Angkor Wat, Angkor Thom, in Java, at Borobudur, which is this huge Buddhist temple complex there, 432 Buddhas, this, that, and the other. I mean, and it's there in Mesopotamia, within the ancient texts, talk about the rules of kings, 432,000 years, and other multiples of 432. It's there in Norse mythology, and as I show in the Cygnus Key, it's there also in ancient Egypt, within the construction of the Great Pyramid, and the geometry associated with the Giza pyramid field.
You mentioned You mentioned Mesopotamia. I'm wondering about Sumer and any connection between the Denisovians and Sumer, or even the Anunnaki of legend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the Anunnaki is essentially a phenomena in its own right. I mean, some people today would like to see them as space aliens that came down here 250,000 years ago, were in South Africa, you know, created humanity to mine for gold, and that gold was then taken off planet, end of story. I don't see the Anunnaki in this way at all, and that's certainly not what the Sumerian texts say. They talk about them as the creators, the builders of human civilization within what appears to be Mesopotamia. They're anthropomorphic, they have human-like qualities, and there's nothing really to disconnect them with, you know, flesh and blood human beings. And the other important thing is that the term Anunnaki is a very late form of their original name, which was Anuna. The Anuna means, well, it can mean the gods of the sky, but it can equally mean the sky people. And when it means the sky people, it therefore intimates to me an elite with knowledge of the stars and our connection with the stars. The exact type of knowledge that we are finding in association with Göbekli Tepe, with ancient Egypt, with the Great Pyramids, the mound-building cultures in North America and in many other parts of the world. In other words, they are the elite with the knowledge of our connection, not just with the stars, but with the death journey, that allowed us to exist, to incarnate in the first place, but also to return back to the source at death. Now, this was valuable knowledge. Not everybody would have this knowledge. Most people in any community, when they died, that was it. You know, they would be buried in some capacity, or their body would be disposed by their families, and that would that. But the elites had this knowledge of how to get back to the divine source. And this would have been very, very valuable information. And I think that this is something that we need to start to understand, that, you know, today we think that we have knowledge of, let's say, heaven through monotheistic traditions and the fact that we'll go there in death. The ancient people didn't know this sort of information. You know, the common people, if you like, unfortunately, had a different understanding and view of life and death. But there were elites, and those elites had been around since probably the Upper Paleolithic age. And many of them would unquestionably have been the descendants of not just the Denisovans, but also of the Neanderthals. They would have been elites. They would have been elite hybrid groups. And this is why they would have looked different, and why they would have been responded to differently by the cultures who came into contact with them.
The Horrible Movie Podcast is a weekly show hosted by Jack Altermat. Jack invites a guest who brings a horrible theater-released movie to dissect. Jack and his guests take you through the highs and lows of the movie and what makes it horrible. New movies, old movies, cult classics, or box office busts. No movie is spared or safe from the Horrible Movie Podcast. It's a fun show with clean language. It's available through Spreaker.com, Apple Podcasts, StudioDNA.media, and everywhere you get your podcasts. Remember, just because it's from Hollywood doesn't mean it isn't horrible.
Richard has tiny talking insects living in his sock drawer.
We are bugs, and we are living in Richard's sock drawer.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber, a mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
All right.
overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market, you know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Andrew Collins, the author of The Cygnus Key, is here. So we owe so much of cosmology, modern civilization, really, to the Denisovans. But why is this information then seemingly being suppressed? Why is it so threatening, do you think?
It's not being suppressed in any way. I mean, the thing about the Denisovans is that this is all brand new. This is something that myself and my contemporaries, people like Graham Hancock and Robert Schock and others are just getting into for the first time, because we're suddenly realizing that there's an alternative to the idea that the lost civilization may have come from either ancient Atlantis or from space aliens or from just some slow gradual evolution. That it's possible that our own civilization was gifted to us by this archaic human group. And the word archaic really doesn't do them justice, because the Denisovans would seem to have been incredibly intelligent people with a completely different mindset, that had their own cultures, their own technologies, which probably some of them were lost thereafter, and we're only rediscovering today. And this is why this is so important. I mean, I'm writing about this in The Cygnus Key. The new book I'm doing with Greg Little, the Denisovan Dawn, which is coming out next year. Graham Hancock is writing a book called America Before. That will be out by the end of the year. That will be full of material on Denisovans. This is big, big news, and there is no way that we can ignore this anymore. And the academics, obviously, they will poo-poo books by myself and Graham Hancock and whatever. But secretly, they will be looking at this and thinking, the Denisovans clearly were very, very important in the evolution of what we'd call human behavior, and that this can no longer be ignored.
Well, you say not being suppressed, but for example, we hear tales of artifacts being found in these Native American burial mounds, being shipped to the Smithsonian, and yet we don't see, giant skeletal remains on display. There does seem to be this approach that if something doesn't fit the official narrative of human history, then it must be pushed aside, disregarded, even discredited.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, this is something that's been there for 200 years or more within the academic community. Anything that they don't like, they suppress. Yes, of course. But, the truth prevails eventually. And, I mean, you talked about the Smithsonian thing. Well, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about, the archaeologists of the Smithsonian, burying giant bones and things like this and destroying them. But the truth of the matter is that, firstly, they did definitely have a large number of giant skeletons. And these are recorded academically as having been transported to the Smithsonian. It was their archaeologists doing the excavations at the mounds in the first place. So they must have gone and ended up there. But the bigger problem is the stupidity of humankind, because what happened at the end of the 1980s, beginning of the 1990s, is the so-called NAGPRA law came into force. And this basically meant that any bones that were considered to be of an indigenous peoples in North America, well, I should say the United States, Canada got a different law, had to be repatriated to whatever tribe was closest to where the bones had been found in the first place. And literally millions of bones were taken from state museums and institutions across the United States, given back to the native people for reburial in whatever manner that they saw fit. And I mean, we're not just talking about bones a few hundred years before, you know, the historical period. We're talking about archaic bones that related 10,000, 15,000 years, and they've all disappeared now. So the irony of this, and I mean, obviously I understand why they did it, but the irony of it is that just a couple of years later, DNA testing came in, and all of those bones are now gone. So we can't test anything. And it's illegal. You have to get special dispensation for any kind of DNA testing of the remains of indigenous peoples in the United States now. It's the same in Australia. In fact, it's even worse in Australia. And it's a sad situation. The morals of it are probably outside the realms of this interview, but it's a situation which means that we cannot test any giant bone to find out its ancestry. We cannot find whether it's modern human, it's Neanderthal, it's Denisovan or something else. We just can't do it today.
What about efforts in Siberia? What about the present Russian regime? Are they interested in this? Are they researching this?
Oh, God, yes, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, the Russians are obviously at the forefront of this. I mean, they don't have the same stigmas that are present, let's say, in the United States and Australia. Plus in China, brand new, genetic testing laboratories are being set up at this time, also in India, and very exciting things are going to be coming out of this. I mean, you know, at the back of all of this is the problems that we've had within anthropology over the past 100 years. You know, the anthropology has been abused and misused by people for things like ethnic cleansing, and Holocaust and stuff like that, and segregation, and you know, all the bad things that we know that have happened. And so it's understandable why there's this reluctance to even embrace the ideas of different types of humans existing in the past, you know, whether they be Denisovans, Neanderthals, whatever. But it's something which, through genetic sciences, is coming back into the fore, and it cannot be ignored anymore. This is changing everything. Genetics is changing everything today, and it's such an exciting time to see the results coming in, which you can do virtually every few months now. You know, we're finding out new discoveries about Neanderthals, Denisovans, and our relationship, you know, to these archaic communities. And as I said, I think that we're beginning to understand that if civilization was gifted to us, it was not gifted by the Atlanteans or by space aliens, but by these archaic human populations that existed prior to the rise of our own human group.
Andrew, a couple of things that come immediately to mind. One is the ancient alien folks are not going to, you're going to be taken off their Christmas card list.
No, it's a good point. I mean, look, you know, they know very well that my views are that I don't believe that flesh and blood aliens came down here in the past and, you know, told us what to do. I don't believe that. I believe it's a great idea. And, you know, I don't say that I would rule it out. But what I do believe, and this is perhaps even more enigmatic, is that through quantum entanglement, you know, the idea that particles, including those of the brains of intelligent beings, are interlinked, that the more we understand about entanglement and that there is a relationship, a connection between all of us that explains things like telepathy, precognition, even mind over matter, that if we're beginning to understand this, then extraterrestrial intelligences probably have known this for thousands, if not millions of years, and that they can connect with us through entanglement, not just to send us pretty pictures or give us messages, but also to control our actions on a very, very subtle level. And what I mean by that is that they could well have been affecting human evolution. And I see this as a very real possibility, and I think it's something that we should be looking at. And I think that if anybody, that it was the Denisovans that first felt and understood this cosmic connection. And I think it's the reason why we look towards the stars for our origin. You know, we don't know why. You know, we're not quite sure what that connection is. We know it's got something to do with our eternal souls and possibly our earliest ancestors. But I think that it has something to do with the fact that human evolution is influenced by non-human, non-terrestrial intelligences, possibly of an extraterrestrial nature. And it's for this reason that I think that, you know, we shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater here as far as ancient aliens are concerned. And that's why I support that particular field as well.
Where are you headed next in terms of your research, Andrew?
Yes, well, as I say, I've just finished my account, so I can go wherever I want. having said that, I have submitted a book called Denisovan Dawn to the publishers, which will be out next year. As I say, it's co-written with my friend and colleague, Dr. Greg Little. He's got his own many books on the fields of Native American mound building cultures and stuff like that already available. On top of that, I need to do a new book on the Great Pyramid, basically the ultimate Great Pyramid book. I was there in Egypt earlier on this year. As some of your listeners will know, I discovered a whole cave complex beneath the Giza Plateau, which
the Collins Caves. They've named them after you.
Yeah, well, some people call it that. And the significance of those caves was not brought out in an earlier book that I wrote on the subject called Beneath the Pyramids that came out in 2009. I was back in Egypt this year. I now understand the significance of those caves, and it is mind-blowing, I tell you. And I need to do a book on this subject, which, you know, hopefully I'll look at next.
The Cygnus Key, the Denisovan Legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and the Birth of Egypt. How do people get a copy of this book?
Easy. Just go onto Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any good online bookstore, and you should be able to find it. And if you go down your local physical material bookstore, who knows, you might find a copy there as well.
And how do people reach out to you if they wish to?
Yes, my website's andrewcollins.com. If you're interested in any of these subjects we've talked about, there are many articles, available there. We also do tours to, you know, these places. We're actually going to go out to all of the Denisovan sites in Siberia next July, if anybody wants to come along with us. And we have other tours. We're going back to Göbekli Tepe in October. Seeing that and a whole lot of other sites. It's just become a UNESCO site. It's got a nice new roof over it, and it's an incredible experience going there. And we always discover new stuff when we go there as well. So, you know, be part of that whole research process. We're also going to Egypt and Cambodia and Java next year. So, it's all there on andrewcollins.com on the website. And obviously follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, speaking of incredible experiences, it has been just that, speaking with you, Andrew, a delight to meet you, and I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed our two-part series on the Denisovan Legacy, the Cult of the Swan and the Cygnus Constellation, and the construction of Göbekli Tepe. Now, before I dim the lights in my little... Oh, wait a minute. I'm not in my little studio beneath the stairs. How about this? Before I say goodnight to the moon over the Mycenaean Bay, I'm going to fill you in on what's in store for episode 102 of Conspiracy Unlimited.
He knew that we had finally solved the case through his confession.
The history of rock and roll is littered with suspicious deaths and the unexplainable.
The last thing he said to anybody was to Suge Knight, and it was, "I'm dying, man."
Lennon, Hendrix, Presley, Jim Morrison, the truth told by the experts and the people there. Revelations that will blow your mind. The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone with Richard Serrett. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Coming up next on Conspiracy Unlimited, could a directed energy weapon be behind the wildfires in California and here in Greece? Dr. Judy Wood, the author of Where Did the Towers Go, will be here to discuss. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now. Kalinikta.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.